Wisconsin I is in La Crosse at the 2015 Republican State Convention, interviewing Congressman Reed Ribble for the 8th District. Reed, thanks for stopping in Wisconsin I.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You just gave a speech that you said that you went to a seminar, and the speaker said Republicans are often perceived as the party of no. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you do.
Well, explain the context and how it resonated with you.
Well, the gist of it was that he was strongly recommending that you stop fighting against things, against ideas, and start fighting for people instead. And it plays into that whole idea that we're just the party of no. And I think, you know, there was a role, quite frankly, when I first went to Congress back in 2011, we had trillion-plus deficits, and there was a time to say no. And we had to slow things down and try to get the economy back in the right way and back on the tracks. And but you can get lost in policy, and policy doesn't often connect with a person's soul and spirit and heart of what they believe and who they want to be and what their dreams and aspirations are for their families, without regard to income, whether they're low income, middle class, or very affluent. We all want to believe in the American ideal and the American dream, but that dream and that ideal is not wrapped up in a policy statement. It's wrapped up in something much more personal and dear to us.
Well, in the hyper-partisan nature of Washington,
yeah,
you actually like to work on issues with Congressman Mark Pocan.
On occasion, Mark and I are very good friends, by the way.
I understand. Do you get pushback from your fellow Republicans for working in a bipartisan way with Congressman Pocan?
I get pushback a little bit from constituents on the very far right, because they're concerned about it. They don't want to see any level of compromise whatsoever. But my argument is, well, hold it. If Mark and I agree, why shouldn't we do what we agree on? Because then you're going to agree. And so we should try to do things that all of us agree with. That's the simple thing. That's what our founders intended. What you agree, do that. If you don't agree, continue to work through it, continue to talk about it until you get agreement.
Okay. One way that I keep track of you public officials is to look at your websites, because it reflects what you're working on.
Yeah.
So let's go through these quickly. Quote, save Social Security. Is Social Security either any better off or worse off than when you first went to the House?
It's worse off than when I first went to the House. It's better off than a year ago.
Okay.
And so as the economy improved, more revenue came in because more people were working, therefore more taxes came in. Actually, the trust fund actually improved last year by about $36 to $37 billion. However, it was a big degradation in 2010, 11, 12, 2009. And so we've got a big hole to get out of. Mm-hmm. The actuaries have told Congress it's now 2033 when the trust fund goes insolvent. And my take is we've got this 15 or 16 year window. The sooner we address the shortfall, the more we can spread it out, not just over time, but over people, and make it less expensive or costly to everybody.
Well, with all the emphasis on foreign affairs, the Afghanistans, yeah, Iraq, and Iran, and
it's
Syria.
It's taking a lot of my time.
Well, but is it taking not only your time, but the time of members of Congress from focusing on some of these bread and butter issues like Medicare and Social Security?
Well, I think what's keeping Congress from actually focusing on Medicare and Social Security is that you have a lot of the Republican conference have taken a pledge, we're never going to raise taxes. You have almost all the Democratic conference taking a pledge, they're never going to touch Social Security and Medicare. And so you've got this tension point when, in fact, in reality, if we look at Medicare, for example, the premiums, the part that the withholding of your payroll hasn't gone up recently or any time in the near past, and so we're underfunding a program at the very moment when more and more citizens are going into it. Mm-hmm. And so we have to recognize there's going to have to be a revenue element if you're going to fix Social Security or Medicare. Otherwise, it's all benefit cuts, which is not palatable to half of the American population. Let's just recognize reality so that we can be honest to our children and honest to seniors.
Is that debate being put on the back burner while we talk about major real threats like ISIS?
I don't know that it's necessarily put on the back burner. There are committees specifically working on those issues. I think on the Medicare side of things, we're waiting for the Supreme Court decision to see what happens with Obamacare here in June, because that might change the medical world environment, the healthcare environment a bit, and there's going to be changes there which will all affect Medicare. And then in Social Security, there's a committee working on reforms and trying to do some things. And I've got a bipartisan group that's also working on some reforms to see if we can come up with an agreement to get this thing fixed.
As a member of Congress, you briefed on national security issues. When two individuals who are shot in Garland, Texas, identify themselves, or ISIS says they were members of ISIS, what have you learned, or what are your fears about so-called Lone Rangers, ISIS, in this country, sir?
There's a fair amount of information out there now, particularly for members of Congress, to see what's going on. And you called it a Lone Ranger. Typically, they use the term Lone Wolf.
Yes, that's a better term.
Very small groups or individuals that can go off the reservation on their own and try to do damage. And if you track in ISIL's website and their communications on Facebook, on Twitter, they're very good with using social media. They're encouraging these types of things to happen from people who are following them in those areas of the internet and media. And so they can claim, this was an ISIL follower because this person registered here and we know where he's been and what have you. And so the threat is real. In fact, in my time in Congress, I'm more concerned today than I've ever been as it relates to security here in the homeland or some larger scale attack taking place. Every single American ought to be concerned.
Well, Congressman Ryan, you may have heard his speech, said our foreign policy is a failure. Would you agree? And is the new threats that you're aware of a direct result of a potential failure?
I'm not a big fan of the president's actions in the Middle East because they communicate weakness and they trigger and act in a weak manner. Now, with that said, I recognize that just last night we had Delta Force in Syria taking out the chief financial officer of ISIL. And the president signed off on that, and they went in, they killed him, they grabbed his spouse, they grabbed a bunch of information and got out without losing a single American life. And so that's a big deal, and you have to give the president credit for acting courageously in that regard. But you can look at policy failures, I believe, that have led us to this place where there's been this kind of hodgepodge approach to foreign affairs that is sending a mixed message, and it shows us to be weak at the very moment we should appear to be strong.
Okay, let's go back to the items on your website. Defending Marinette Marine workers. What's the threat to that key part of your district,
well,
sir?
Well, certainly Marinette Marine builds a littoral combat ship, and I want to make sure that if the Navy continues with a littoral combat ship or a frigate-style ship that is the same class, maybe just a little bit larger, that Marinette Marine is in the mix to be bidding on that and possibly getting that award. Now, I've said all along that the fine folks at Marinette Marine, their engineers and designers and the folks that estimate these things, and also the builders, they have to make their case with the Navy by building the best ships in the world so that the Navy wants to do work with them. And in fact, they've risen to that challenge. They've invested over $100 million in their facility in Marinette, Wisconsin. And they're building a world-class warship right here in Wisconsin. I'm so proud of these workers and the men and women every single day get up to build the types of weapons and the ships that they're building there for our national defense.
Last week, your office talked about your bill on human trafficking. Can you give us the parameters of that, please?
Well, basically, I'm well aware that human trafficking, not just here in the U.S., but globally, is an ever-increasing problem. And at the very time where you would think mankind has kind of moved and emerged beyond these medieval types of ideas in human slavery and sex trafficking, in fact, we haven't. And so we need to stand up boldly and say we reject this at every single level, wherever it occurs in the globe, we reject it, that the sanctity and the humanity of individual people is something that we as Americans hold dear and will defend it.
And then one other item on your website, healthcare costs. You want to give the CBO, you want to create a special unit in the CBO that would project healthcare costs out 20 and 30 years. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe 30 or 40 years.
30 or 40 years. Because you want to do this, is that a recognition that affordable health care is going to be with us for this period?
No. It's a recognition that if we're going to get at chronic diseases like obesity or Alzheimer's, take Alzheimer's for an example. We spend about $120 billion a year on Alzheimer's. just treatment of Alzheimer's. Now, that's 20% of all Medicare expenses go to that one disease. It seems to me that instead of investing millions of dollars today to find a cure, maybe it would be better for us to invest $1 billion this year to find a cure, because that's $1.2 trillion a decade of savings if we could cure it, and you gain all the productivity of these family members who are now taking care of their elderly parents that have Alzheimer's. But we can't get at that because we look at life through a 10-year budget window. So if I raise the funding at NIH to get at these chronic diseases, mm-hmm. to actually do the research that's necessary to solve the problem, I have to find $10 billion to take away from something else.
Yes.
You know, where in reality, if we looked at this through a 30 or 40-year window, we could achieve the savings that we want and not act as if the country ends in year 11 every year, because it doesn't. And if we would have this office, we could look at all kinds of things through the long lens, which is how you look at your personal life. I know when my wife and I got married and we were quite young in our early 20s, we were planning out our future already then. How much do we want to put away in our IRA? How much do we want to save? How much do we want to invest? And we were planning for the long haul. And the very same things that you do in your personal budget, we ought to be doing for the nation. Otherwise, we're too short-sighted.
What should be the response of Congress if the U.S. Supreme Court holds that states without exchanges like Wisconsin cannot offer subsidies? Should Congress respond? Should states respond on their own?
No, I think Congress should respond because it shows a major flaw in the Affordable Care Act. And I think that response ought to be for the Congress to begin doing the very things that Republican members like myself and others have campaigned on for 4 or 5 years. Let's open up high-risk pools so that we can actually drive this cost down and provide the support locally. Let's allow Americans to shop nationwide like you can for your homeowner's insurance or your car insurance. Let's hold on to that portability and let people own their own insurance. You know, let's get at tort reform so we can get at that defensive medicine surcharge that happens. If we would begin to do those things, especially with the high-risk pool, so that there's a subsidy for that lower-income person who needs it, I think you're actually going to be able to bring the cost curve down and start saving some money.
Before you were elected to Congress, you were a leader in the roofing industry nationally.
Yeah.
Roofers have a unique interest in the debate over immigration.
Yeah.
So talk to me about your perspective on that very difficult issue, immigration.
Yeah. Well, I believe if you look at demographics, and I think everything should start at demographics, and I'm not talking about just here in the U.S., although your question is specific to that, but I want to get to a point. If you look at demographics, all throughout the emerged world, the first world, we are seeing declining birth rates, and we're seeing aging populations. If you project 20 or 25 years ahead, what I anticipate is a global competition for labor. It's going to be severe. I was just in Bulgaria last week, and their current young generation is one half the size of the generation immediately preceding it. It's the worst in the whole Eastern Europe area.
One half?
Yes, one half. It's devastating, about 46%. And so it's a devastating number when you think about that. And our youngest generation, the one found, the millennial generation, is actually smaller than the millennial generation. And so there's coming a time where there will be a workforce crisis. We should deal with that now rather than waiting to deal with it. And so I like the idea of trying to take immigration reform by its individual steps, get the border secure, because every American wants to know that border is secure.
Yes.
With all these lone wolf potential attacks, I think we need to know that the border is secure. And then begin to reform the system. So you can take care of the dreamers. You can work with highly skilled, but that's nuanced. Low-skilled workers, and then the last piece of that puzzle is to deal with those that entered the country illegally that have been here for a while. How do we treat them without creating a mechanism or an incentive for others to line jump? So you can't have any type of reward for line jumping.
Which raises the question of path to citizenship, and you've heard the term amnesty.
Yeah, I might define amnesty differently than others, but there is a path to citizenship right now. It's difficult, and it's one that in many respects leads to this problem because it's very complex and costly. But the fact is that path does exist, and we need to be aware of that. But I think that if we created a system whereby those that came here illegally, they raise their hand, they say, I'm guilty, I admit it, I blew it, just as if you did, you committed some misdemeanor and you decide you want to get right with the law. You raise your hand and then you take the punishment. There's a punishment that happens, however, when it's done, right? You don't call that amnesty. You call that paying the penalty. And so it might be making sure that they've paid any back taxes, that there's a fine to pay, that they're drug-free, that they have employment so that they won't become wards of the state. And you kind of have all these steps, which then allow them to go into a probationary period, because that they've got to pay for the crime. They go through this probationary period while that line in their country of origin starts to go down. They can re-enter at the back of that line. I'm not calling for a touchback provision. We can get a work permit for them while they're here, but they can't jump in front of somebody who's been waiting patiently for years in their country of origin to do it the right way.
We're at a political convention. I have a political question.
All right.
Twice now in Madison, I've heard if Governor Walker doesn't seek a third term, I've heard your name as somebody who might be interested in 2018. So you're here. I want to ask about that. Do you have any interest?
At this point, I'm happy being a U.S. congressman. I watched the governor do his work, and I'll let the governor do his work, and we'll let 2018 deal with 2018 when that happens. You know, we do have a lieutenant governor that, if we're calling Governor Walker President Walker in a year from now, there's a lieutenant governor that will be governor. That's a dynamic that I'm not at this point really delving into.
I understand. Congressman Reed Ribble, thanks for talking to Wisconsin.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.